Hey, leaders, listeners, and life's most curious people, this is Meaningful Mischief. Three entrepreneurs in pursuit of bringing our best, giving the most, and having fun along the way. No overnight successes, scaling hacks, or planning models here. Just a conversation about what we're learning and loving about meaning, impact, health, wealth, and everything in between. This is Meaningful Mischief. Let's jump in.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back.
Welcome to our pivot episode.
That's right. As per usual, we get together a few minutes before we hit record and we just like catch up with each other. And then we end up in a conversation that we want to then have with all of you because we think it's an interesting topic and we have questions ourselves. And so this one in particular is about the inappropriately appropriate, the being a human and saying things and you have good intentions, but then you might offend other people, or what is offensive today and what is okay? And is it okay as long as you have good intentions, or I don't know. And we ended up having stories and examples of things that have happened to us and wondering what's okay. What's okay to say?
And the difference between the 80s and current.
Yes.
And people get offended.
So I'm
but
a
wait,
Gen
wait,
Xer.
One second. Is it appropriately inappropriate, or is it inappropriately appropriate?
I think that's the fundamental question.
And is there a difference?
I think there is a difference. So we always talk about Stell being inappropriately
appropriate. Let's
dive. Stell says stuff and does stuff, and both James and I are like, holy shit, he just did that, and nobody's mad at him. So in a way, he's inappropriate, but it's appropriate in the context because I think they know where he's coming from. So So, and then appropriately inappropriate, I guess, is the same thing, isn't it? Appropriately inappropriate. Yeah, because he is appropriate.
I'm appropriately appropriate.
You think
it's all about timing. 100%.
No, I think you're inappropriately inappropriate. Anyway.
It's all about AI.
How did we start on this topic? I know I told you guys a story, but I don't know what
started.
Prompted
you started. It was your story. Come on, say it. Come on, go.
You were telling us a story.
Oh.
But I can't say that story, which you're about to tell us what the story is.
Well, okay. It actually started with, we have someone in common that Stella's going to meet next week. And I said, you'll meet her next week. She's wonderful and she's beautiful. And then what did you say, Stell?
No, and then you said...
I said, does that
matter? You think I'm just going to go up to her and say you're beautiful? And she goes, and you said, yeah, you're going to say that she's beautiful. And no, I'm going to say, wow, Mary was so right. You are beautiful.
Right.
And then Mary said,
I don't know. She's going to like that you say that. And then that prompted a discussion. Is it not okay to say someone's beautiful? So then here comes my story. We used to work. So someone in my network who we used to work together, no longer work together anymore. And we were having this back and forth, just catching up on how things were going. And we're a strategy and communications agency that used to work with their company. And he said that, business is going really well. And I was like, oh, did you find a better marketing agency? But I'm bummed. Like, did your marketing agency actually get you more leads or whatever? Anyway, he said, I don't know. I've met them. I'm not sure it has anything to do with that. I think it's the election and the economy, whatever. But he said, I do know that their leader is not nearly as attractive as the last leader. Ha ha ha. Which would have been me of the agency. So then I was explaining to these guys that, I'm a Gen Xer. I grew up in the 80s and 90s where anything was, was the Wild West. People said stuff to you. It didn't matter if you were offended. You just had to deal with it. I also, through university, worked in restaurants. And anything goes in a restaurant. Not even what you say, but what you do. So I am not easily flustered. So I just said, well, at least we have that going for us. And then I moved on. So then these guys start asking me, well, wait, it's not okay to say someone's attractive? And I was explaining that, well, maybe over
no,
a
so,
couple
no,
of
what years. What I asked was, should he have said you're attractive and intelligent because it's all about the package? And you said, no, that's not what he said or meant or something along those lines.
That's
and
right.
About
you
being
said,
offended, yeah, because if you say you're attractive but maybe don't say anything about the quality of the work, some people can say, Okay, thanks. I'll dismiss the compliment about the attraction, because what you're really saying is that I'm crapping my job.
Right. And so Stell's like, no, he meant you're the whole package. I'm like, well, he didn't say that, so we don't know. All we know is, gosh darn, she sure was pretty.
I mean, right.
You know? So I don't know if all women are going to, like, hey, you can tell me I'm pretty all day long. If I think that sounds nice. I'm not offended.
I mean, but doesn't it depend on who it's coming from?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes, it does. And how it's, 100% it does. I was telling you how we used to do this outreach on LinkedIn to meet new business leaders. And it was this automated thing. And I wasn't involved in the automation. I was more like, I was sending the messages that I wrote, but someone on the back end in my team was managing the incoming. And it was like, hey, we're reaching out to business leaders. We help tell the story of what you do and the impact that you want to have and to activate your team and your industry and all that stuff. And then they would say, so, you know, let's have a conversation. And I just, one of them came back and like, we're sending like 50 of these out a month. So it was quite a long program. It was only once that this happened, but we got a reply that just said, you're pretty. And that was it. I'm like, thanks. And is it like LinkedIn is a business platform? So yeah, I think in that case, inappropriate. I mean, we didn't reply to him, but.
What I find fascinating, because it just hit me now.
Yeah.
I don't know the listeners if they we have these commercials that Dove, it's a the brand of soap,
yeah,
that came out years ago.
Yeah.
Real Beauty.
And there's the Real Beauty, yeah, the real marketing. Right?
Yeah.
They're brilliant because there was a couple of episodes. One was where I think they were moms, but the moms would draw a picture of themselves. And then their kid would also draw a picture of their moms. Yeah. And then the picture of themselves were always like not the most attractive looking things. And then what the kids drew was like beauty beyond beauty. Right. Mm-hmm. And then one of the things, because I found it fascinating, I took another course and they were talking about the masculine and the feminine. And the guy that was leading it was talking about the percentage of abuse that happens in the female population in the world. And and it was high. I think one in three, I think, is the statistic that he said. And then he said, if you ask women on a scale of 1 to 10, where would they rate themselves in terms of beautiful? Less than 2 or 3% of the population would give themselves a 9 or 10. Right. Mm-hmm. So now what I find interesting with what the conversation is that we had, it's like what's actually being heard in terms of what's going on internally in the internal process of how they view beauty and what is it that's happening on the outside. And then when the combination of the two, right, because you just said, you know, could everybody say that you're pretty all day long? You're like, well, no, it depends on who's saying it. Well, what happens if the person on, I'll say man, but it doesn't really matter who it is. If somebody says that, you know, oh, wow, you look pretty. Meanwhile, it's like there's something internally that they're not confident in their own skin. And then it's heard by someone that doesn't feel like they're beautiful. Well, you could see how it's going to be misperceived or whatever the perception is that's going to be happening on both ends. Anyways, that just came up. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows what everybody's going through at any given time. Like, I know today it feels like we have to be way more careful about what we say. And in some, and I don't like that because I think it waters down who people are. And I know that communication, I mean, geez, I'm a communication strategist. I know that communication is about how it's received, not how it's intended or delivered. But on some level, like, I know that Stell is harmless. So whatever Stell says, I know he's my friend and I love him. And so I take everything he says in that spirit. I would hate for Stell not to be Stell because the world has said you're not allowed to say you're beautiful, whatever. I don't. So
and I live it's in also this, in a workplace. So in a workplace, it's also depends on if it's in an environment where there's more than the two people involved, it's also somebody else's interpretation. Because, for example, let's say the three of us worked in an office and Stell made a compliment to you.
Yep.
and you two were both fine with it. The giver and the receiver of the compliment was both okay with it, but somebody listening in said, well, I'm offended by that. That shouldn't have been said in the workplace, and I'll go to HR. All of a sudden, it can be screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. No, it happened. It happened at one of the courses I was in. You know, because you know me. It's like, if I see you guys, I'm going to hug you. It's not like, right? They're friends. And then she wasn't exposed to me before. And, you know, obviously I know a lot of people in the room, so I'm just hugging everybody. And then at one point, she pulled me aside and said, it's a little inappropriate how much hugging. I just want to warn you, some people aren't going to take it well. And I was like, oh, okay. But that's an example.
Was she like
an
instructor or just like another person?
No. Yeah, another person in the room.
See, don't you find that interesting? Did you just give her a big hug? I find that so interesting.
No. I know when to, you know, again, I...
James is joking. Obviously, no, hug the girl who says the thing. That's not
listen, because he knows me well enough that I would probably do just a short. Oh, yeah, really?
James, can you just for fun say that Stel makes you awkward and tell us that again? Because I love how you said it. So James and Stel spend a lot of time together. You travel together and stuff. So yeah, I would like to know that he makes you uncomfortable.
No, it doesn't. I mean... Early on, his cuddles can be
cuddles.
very, very loving and long. not just with me, but sometimes I'm talking to Del and somebody walks past and all of a sudden it's like, hey, and then there's a cuddle going on and I'm just like stood there watching the cuddle for 3 minutes. I'm going, okay, well, I'll probably just go and get a coffee and come back then, shall I?
And they'll still be cuddling.
But yeah. I know he's doing it, and yeah, Stel's not been inappropriate with that.
I don't think so either. Yeah, I'm around a lot of Stel's cuddling.
Okay,
well.
A story just popped up. It actually came up yesterday. So Greek heritage, right? I mean, we're born to hug and kiss on both cheeks, men, women. It's a custom, right? And I'm. Work a lot with the Jewish Orthodox community. And at the very beginning, I met a rabbi. Super nice guy, right? And he talked a lot about his amazing wife and kids. And so here we are at a charity event. Okay. And they were running it. They raised money. And so I meet now the rabbi's wife, right? This one. And I'm like, oh, so nice to meet you. And I kiss her on both cheeks, right? And I don't think anything of it. Right. And then a friend of a friend came over and he said, Stel, you can't touch Orthodox Jewish women, especially when it's the rabbi's wife. And I turned beet red. I was
that
so uncomfortable.
But you didn't know. You didn't know. What,
you don't know. But the thing, so here now I walked up to the rabbi. I said, I'm so sorry. I kissed your wife. And he looked at me and he said, Stel, it's you. You're Greek. Just don't do it again.
Well, that's beautiful. I found myself in a situation where I went to shake hands with an Orthodox Jewish man, and then he recoiled, and I made kind of a joke about, yeah, I get it, you know, shaking hands and germs or whatever, because that's not it, and he explained it to me. And I mean, I was grateful that he explained it to me, and I was grateful that he caught it before I did the thing, because, like, you know, to each his own, and I want to respect people's boundaries, but if I don't know what they are, you know, and culturally.
So, yes, go ahead.
Well, it's just culturally, we're all different. Like, my son is a really warm person. And when in kindergarten, he used to hug, and we're a huggy family, big time hugging family. And in kindergarten, he would go around hugging people. And we had the teacher, parent teacher interview in those little baby chairs that you sit in talking to the teacher. And she said, you know, Simon really can't go around hugging everyone because not everybody's culture is okay with that. And I was like, oh my gosh, we're policing hugs. Like, we're giving guns to whoever, but we're policing hugs. Like, anyway,
the world needs more hugs.
Right?
Yesterday so. I had an Orthodox Jewish client, and that actually came up because he came to the house and he said, so, you know, Fabi, my wife, was on her way home with the kids. And he said, I hope your wife doesn't get offended because I don't touch women. And I said, so, you know, me curious now.
Yeah.
I said, do like, how do you explain? Like, do people not get offended if because it's automatic? Like, you reach out to shake the hand,
yes,
and he says, "Oh, I have a good one." I said, "What do you say?" And he goes, "My mom told me not to touch women unless they belong to me." Mm. In other words, only his wife, because at least it cuts the. Cause I was going to ask you, like, did you feel awkward when all of a sudden, you know, some guy's like, no, don't touch.
I did feel. I felt awkward. Right. Yeah, I felt like I was offended. Like, I didn't know that I was crossing a line, so it did feel awkward. But I mean, the whole women belong to me thing is a bit interesting as well, right? So there's that.
Well, maybe it wasn't exactly those words. Yeah, but you said it in the way that it reframed it.
Which is that is a nice way of reframing it, I suppose.
I think we just have to be more mindful, right, than what we could have been maybe 20 years ago. Because like you're talking about, you know, in the 80s and stuff and 90s, people were more direct with the communication and also physically. And now we are in this, you know, kind of very vulnerable environment, especially at work, where, you know, one foot wrong, not just in person, but even in WhatsApps and texts and social media and emails and all different things, you know, one foot wrong and you can be at risk of losing your job and your family and your life and everything that goes with it. Totally.
I know.
Don't you guys think it's gone the wrong, like the total opposite way?
See, okay, here's how I feel about it. I think I agree with you, Stelle, because we're not helping people become strong and resilient by creating a rule book for what people are allowed to say and not say. For instance, like, I'm a different person than you guys. Things that, you know, and there's no way for the world to understand what offends Mary Farron or not. And so it's Mary's responsibility to filter and say, okay, that person doesn't get me. I'm not going to coach them on how to talk to me unless it's an important relationship. And I'll say, okay, listen, like, we worked with a guy for 48 hours. He didn't work out in our business. You guys know this story. But one of the things, and this is not the reason that he didn't work out, but it was one of my first meetings with him. We have a lot of women on our team. In fact, most of our team is women.
Majority.
Yeah. So he was referring to our leadership team as the girls. And the first time I'm like, and he's like a Gen X or two. And I'm like, okay, that's not. And then the next time, like five times in, finally I said, can you stop referring to them as the girls? They're both very experienced, bright,
capable
professionals who are our team. Don't call them the girls. And he kind of laughed it off, said thanks. Like, he was fine about it. So there's things like that where you're like, okay, if we're going to have a working relationship, you can't just package these people as the girls or whatever. But in most cases, it's like, if you say things I don't like, I'm just gonna be like, well, I don't like what he said or she said. I'm not gonna go and be like, okay, everybody. Like, it amazes me that somebody would walk up to another person in a group environment where they have no responsibility for the group or the well-being of the group. And they just think, because I believe hugging is wrong, I'm gonna go up and tell the person hugging everybody that it's wrong. Like, they're assuming responsibility for the thoughts and feelings of these other completely able-bodied adults. And so to me, I'm like, that goes way too far. Like, don't, you know, prescribe how I should feel and don't intervene. Like, to me, it's too much. If you're offended, then deal with how you're offended. Don't try to create a script, an appropriate script for the rest of the world.
Yeah. There's a couple of things that are coming up. Go ahead, James, can you have to say something?
No, I'm just going to say that I was just been thinking whilst you're saying that. I'm thinking, is it that we're more vulnerable and we're more sensitive to what people are saying? Or is it that we all have, not we all, but the majority of people have a more sense of entitlement about themselves? And that entitlement to what goes, no, you can't talk to me like that. You don't have the right to say that to me. I'm offended. Whereas before it might have been, well, yeah, you made that comment, but we just get on with it. Whereas now it's like, I've got rights. You can't say that to me. Like, I'll give you an example, right?
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. I was, I'm doing some renovations on the house. There was a lady I spoke to the other day who, as a consultant, she gave me a quote for the work. And I was like, holy yes, this is like 10 times more than the other person's quote. Yeah. And I was like, look, I said, that's crazy, Bryce. And she was like, excuse me, you do not have the right to say that to me. That was what she said. And I said, no, I do have the right because I'm a customer. And for me, your price is being 10 times the price of somebody else, which has already come very reputable. She goes, my clients love me and respect me. Take that back. You do not have the right to say that. And I was like, where's that come from? You know?
It's ridiculous.
So I don't know if it might be a combination of both. It might be that, because if you think about it, what we're talking about here is not just in the workplace. This is how the world operates.
100%.
Communication 100%. is how wars are won and lost and games are won and lost and the world goes around. So this isn't just about, you know, sensitivity and affection in the workplace or anything like this. This is everything. You know, the world is run by humans. And so is it that we are a little bit more sensitive now than we were before, or is it that we all have got a bit more sense of entitlement and we think we have more rights and that people don't have the right? You don't have the right to come into my space and tell me 1, 2, 3. And because of that, I feel, you know, and now we are exposing how we feel to put them down because we're saying, I now feel like this because you don't have the right to say that to me. I don't know, maybe it's a bit of both, but.
Yeah. I think it is a bit of both. It's such a good, what a good story that we didn't even know you had until this moment. That's such a good one. Like, of course you get to say what you want to say and she gets to feel however she feels about it, but she doesn't get to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're offended.
Take that comment back.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to use one of my favorite quotes of all time is Viktor Frankl. He wrote Man's Search for Meaning. He was a Holocaust survivor, all of that. He says, between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. In the space is your power to choose your response. In your response lies your growth and your freedom. Things happen. Life isn't easy. People are assholes. All of that's true. You actually can't go create the world in any different form. The only thing you can do is respond how you choose to. So her choice in that moment, your choice is to say, that's crazy, and I'm going to tell you so. Her choice is to say, thank you very much. I don't work with people who say I'm crazy. Everybody else loves me. Goodbye. But you can't rewrite what you say, you know? And the last of the human freedoms is the power to choose our response. Like, we're getting mad that someone called me pretty or commented on my outfit or whatever. And like Viktor Frankl lost his entire family in the Holocaust and he was in a concentration camp and lost literally the clothes on his back. He didn't know if he was eating the next day. And he still found meaning and all of that in his life. Like, I think we've lost perspective a little bit. Like, does that stuff 100%. Really matter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's you guys know the Diaries of a CEO, the podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And I was listening to an episode, Dr. Erica Komisar, her name is.
Okay.
And it was amazing. I mean, it was, she's basically talking about the impact of like the dangers of daycare, which doesn't sound like an interesting episode, but what her point was.
It sounds interesting to a mom who put her kids in daycare for however long.
And so it became really interesting really quickly. Then I'd recommend that you listen to it because it was talking about the impact on the child that the mom, most moms are working now. And the impact of not having the mom at home. And then it moved into her discussing the impact of the relationships between men and women and what it was, you know, in the 70s and 80s where, you know, moms were at home, the men worked. And now it swung the other way. And she even said it swung too far the other way. And
you know what? That's a whole other episode, my friend.
the impact that it's having on society, right? And then, you know, I'm big on the masculine, the feminine. I love that, you know, having those discussions. But what the other story that came up in my head was when we used to travel to Greece every summer.
Can we pause for a second, though? Because you kind of just glossed over that massive bomb that you threw on all of the working
It's all connected, though. It's all connected. It's all connected. Let me piece this story and then I'll come back and talk about the working women. Because it's all part of the bigger picture of understanding the energies, okay, or the essences of the individual or the value systems and the beliefs and so on and so forth, and how they can get impacted by how society is structured. So with regards to the group that we met in Greece, it was their Greek suites. So the two of us were Greek Canadian. So we meet a whole group of Greek Swedish women and became really good friends. I mean, to this day, we still connect this, you know, happy birthday, that type of thing. And we were having a conversation and they said, it's a necessity for us to come here. And I'm like, a necessity? They're like, no, we need to come to Greece. And I said, why do you need to come to Greece? Said, we feel alive. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, we feel alive as women. And I said, what does Greece have anything to do with make you feel alive? She goes, we're in a society in Sweden where they barely even shake hands. They don't touch each other. And it's very, you know, conservative, you know, environment. So here's these, you know, Greek, very huggy, loving, kissing women. And there's no compliments. There's no conversation. They just feel empty or something's missing. Then they go to Greece and, oh my God, you're beautiful. You're gorgeous. All these things. And it rejuvenates their aliveness. And then they go back to Sweden and then back to Greece and back to Sweden again. Anyways, back now to the whole thing with regards to the episode in terms of, because what she was saying is that there's a disconnect between the essence of the woman, okay, and then the essence of the man, which is now disrupted.
And are you talking man, woman, or masculine, feminine at that point?
She was talking man, woman at this point, and then and then she gave the context, but she has two sons. And then she started to discuss the impact that it's going to have on the younger generation in terms of what's right, what's wrong, you know, how do you communicate? All these things are going to, that got impacted. So,
now, anyways, question. Those are the two things.
Yeah, sure.
I have like 100 questions on this one, and we might need to have another episode on it.
Keep it rolling. We'll do like part A and part B.
Okay. Well, the Gen X group of people born, I guess, in the 70s and 80s, right? I don't know. Anyway, me. We're known as the first latchkey kids. We're the ones whose moms went out to work for the first time. So we're now like two or three generations into the working mom world. Is that because when she's talking about that, is she talking about a new version of that now? Or is she going all the way back to when I was a kid and we had two working parents and we were, because
no, she probably before that. So she was talking about when the roles
when that shifted.
Of the mom and when it shifted. And there's a point, again, watch the episode, because I don't want to say something that she didn't actually say, but she said how it's the pendulum has swung the other way. Mm-hmm. And again, what I was thinking at the time, and now it's going to be timely with everything that's happening politically and financially. There was a point where both parents needed to work, right? And the amount of debt that exists in the world right now, like,
we have lifestyles where people need to work. Yeah. 100%.
You know, we have lifestyles that people need to work. We have environments that people need to work. We have, like, you know, all these tariffs coming in now and loss of jobs are going to be next. And, you know, there's so many things. And I think our next episode is going to be political, but on politics. But it's important to understand these things, that it's not just one issue. There's a lot of things that are showing up that if we can piece them together and at least allow, you know, hopefully our conversations allow people to think and just ask questions and be curious about what's right for them, right? How do we think personally? Like, what is it that's important for us in terms of values? And
because I feel like, so here's what's interesting. I don't like what's I don't like the sound of what this lady was talking about. I'm curious, though. I'm not mad at you, and I'm not thinking that she shouldn't be able to bring this perspective into the world. It's making me want to talk about it more because I have all kinds of examples and beliefs around, you know, parenting and modeling what we want for our kids and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I have like a lot of thoughts and about that. But what's interesting is I think it's great that people are bringing controversial, maybe unpopular to me, ideas out into the world. Like, I don't think we should be shutting down those ideas, right? Like, I'm observing myself.
Put it on the show notes, though.
get fired up. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Put it on the show notes.
And then just say that, you know, the people in this podcast do not support or advocate what is being said in that other.
Well, no, I'm paraphrasing and putting pieces together, but yeah. So it's the hidden dangers of daycare. It's child attachment expert, hidden dangers of daycare. It might be causing future issues for your kid. Birth rates are plummeting and it's terrifying. Dr. Erica Komisar. Like that's the actual title.
Yeah. Okay.
It's really, really good. And the way that she articulates and communicates it is amazing. And yeah. She uses research and
I think that's great. The thing that's upsetting about it is that you're like, this is going to land on a bunch of people who have no choice but to work. And so when we talk about I have a niece who's just turned 29. She just had a baby a month ago. She lives in the US. She gets 4 months off and she goes back to work. For her to even know that that podcast exists causes how much anxiety, because she has to, like, she does not have a choice. She has to go back to work.
But here's the thing, okay? And again, you have to understand that it's not the quantity of time that you spend with the children. It's the quality of time that you spend with the children.
What happens
now, and you'll hear it even in the podcast, it's like everything, she even says, everything should be geared around the child's development. What is it that the child needs, right? And we get so caught up in other things that are not meaningful, right? That don't have the impact that it needs in terms of the family unit. And, you know, we brought up the values. But anyways, it was an amazing podcast. It's not done in a way to make people feel bad. It's done in a way to make people think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because one thing I realized, people don't think. They don't critically think. You have to have critical thinking skills in order to understand it and to be able to navigate through what's happening right now and what's going to continue to happen.
I agree with you. I also don't agree with the premise that people don't think. Like, again, it's like maybe some people aren't thinking critically.
Yeah, critically thinking is the key.
I would offer up that there's not a mom listening that wouldn't argue with that. With that statement, that they probably they think very deeply about the choices they make for their kids, even if we don't agree with what those choices are, whatever they are. If you're staying home, if you're working, if you're standing on your head, if you're feeding them only broccoli, whatever. I think that moms think very deeply about that is in the context of their lives. Whether
they are doing the best that they can do is the best choice with the information and the options available. I think we all do that, right? Not just as parenting, I think, with the decisions with work or buying a car or which country to live in or looking after our parents. We all do, you know.
What we can.
Just one quick thing that you said about, that's an interesting comment that you said, that it's about the quality time rather than the quantity time with the kids. I would say that probably quantity is more important than quality. It depends on the age of the child. But for me, and it depends on how much quality versus quantity, but if you could do 2 hours a week with your child, but really thought-provoking stimulus activity, or you could do half an hour a day where you're maybe not asking, but you're just present as a parent, I would go for that option, the second option of more quantity.
Right. Wow, that's interesting.
It depends on the age of the child, right? But I mean, I've got young kids, but just being there and being present, I think, is more important at that age than me being less present, but then being stimulating for a short period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting, it's a whole other topic. Yeah, and it's an emotional one because people care so much about the choices that they make. And, you know, oftentimes I'm a mom and I've been in the mom conversations where it's like, well, I could never go to work because I want to raise my own children. And it's like, wait a second. And then, I'm a working mom and I think that it's important to show your kids that you're useful in the world. Like both of those are equally offensive to the other side and neither of them are absolutely right. But there is, once you add emotion to a discussion, that you're not having a rational, analytical discussion anymore. You're having an emotional discussion and you have different beliefs and values around certain things. So you're not there. There is no absolute right, no matter how much research this lady has, or, you know, how many real world examples I have of, you know, successful families who have been to daycare, you know, like, anyway, how do we get on that topic?
Well, going back to it, it's down to communication, because, for example, I haven't listened to the podcast, but I will do. If she turns around and says, we've done studies, or studies have been done, and this is what the facts show, that's one thing. But if she turns around and says, look, I'm a mum, you know, this is what we've done. Mums, I understand, we're all doing the best that we can do. There's different ways, different children, different environments, different circumstances. Look, we've done some studies, and this is what the studies would suggest, but I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying this is my opinion, but, you know, that's a completely different scenario.
Yeah, differently. Yeah.
And I think we're all, just going back to what we were talking about earlier, we're all just a body of emotions. That's all we are.
Yes.
We're all sensitive. We all want to feel appreciated and needed, and we want respect in different ways, and we want to be acknowledged. And I think that when it comes down to communication, we should have the right to say what we think, but we should be cognizant of who we are saying that to and their feelings and how it's going to be interpreted. And if there's anybody else around that may also indirectly interpret that in a different way, I think we have to just be, if we are going to be kind to the universe, I think we should be kind to each other first.
I agree. Try
and think about, okay, I want to get this message across, but how is it going to be perceived? And maybe if I just tweaked it a little bit differently, I'll still get my message across, but I'm not going to offend them as much, or I'm not going to offend them at all.
Yeah, I think there's something beautiful in what you just said, because there, yes, we should be able to be ourselves, but we should also be responsible and kind humans. So I was in a meeting last week with the leaders of an organization. It's a Canadian company, large Canadian company. And we were talking about just the political environment today. And maybe it's not just the political environment. Let's say the cultural society today in North America, anyway, that there seems to be a permission to be an asshole, that you can say whatever you want, you can trash whoever you want, that there's this emboldened, I'm going to be who, whatever. Like, and so things like, you go into healthcare facilities and you see signs up on the counters that say, we will not tolerate people yelling at us. I saw it in a bank. So I'm like, healthcare, people are stressed out. The healthcare system isn't always fast. Maybe that's, you know, it kind of incites some anger sometimes, and I get it. But I saw it, the same sign at the bank teller recently, and I'm like, holy, like, people come up and
the
yell
airport.
At bank tellers at airport. Yeah, like, that's, that part shouldn't be okay. So there is a balance. Like, you can't just be like, I'm angry today, so I'm going to take it out on every poor soul serving me coffee or giving me, you know, money out of my bank account or whatever. Like, we do have a responsibility.
So my question is, why are the customers getting that pissed off? Like, what's the actual underlying root cause?
Well, that's a great question. We should, maybe that's our next topic, because I do think there's a, I don't think it has to do with the bank or the nurse or the,
no, of course it does.
You know, or the coffee shop. It's not those experiences. It's an underlying tension. Yeah. Should we call this one? How long have we been talking?
40 minutes. 9 o'clock. So maybe we should bring it to a close.
All right. I think, you know what, James?
We just got warmed up, man.
I know. And well, yeah, I mean, just imagine what the next couple episodes are going to be about. Final thought goes to you is about say what you think, but also have a responsibility to others. Do you want to like wrap it up with your beautiful British accent and your sweet thoughts?
And cuddles.
No, don't. Now I'm offended at what you just said, because
don't talk about my accent. I was born this way.
Yeah. Don't discriminate me. No, I think we should all have the right for freedom of speech, but I think that we just have to be mindful of who we're saying it to and the way in which it's often not what we say; it's the way in which we say it.
Yeah.
So the tonality and things like this, and I think that, you know, this is something we should all be working on or doing courses in, or definitely being taught at school.
Yeah,
that's
what I
would do. One thing before we go, so the only thing you could do is work on yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We know that most of our communication is through body language. And whatever's happening internally is actually projecting externally in nonverbal cues and ways. So be you and continue to grow you.
Yeah. And then just because it's top of mind for me today, and you mentioned it, James, there is a study. It's a famous study from the late 60s on communication. And people misinterpret it, but it essentially says that when you're communicating emotion or attitude, that only 7% of your communication is what you say. The rest, the remaining, is how you say it. So the voice intonation, like the literally, like how you bring the words out. And then the other part is your body language. And I would offer up that any communication that we have in the world is an emotional communication. Like, you are trying to convey something, whether it's passion or inspiration, trust, confidence, belief, all of that. So only 7% is the content of what you say. And so the how you say it, to your point, is a pretty important piece. So
yeah.
All right, everybody.
Good wrap up.
This was fun and interesting. Until next time.
And that's all for this episode of Meaningful Mischief. If you found value in today's conversation, you can subscribe wherever you podcast. And hey, spread the mischief yourself. You'll find all the links in the show notes. You can visit us at meaningfulmischief.com and follow us on Instagram at meaningfulmischief. Until next time, keep making meaning and have fun while doing it. This is Meaningful Mischief, signing off.